Welcome to Stories of Hope. My name's Bryce Davies, a Salvation Army officer based in Brisbane. We're on our second episode of Rich Tapestries with Nuria Gonsalves. Good to see you, Nuria. Welcome.
Good to see you, Bryce. And I'm so excited to have on next guest speaker.
The second episode. That's right. Yes. Our first episode with Frank went really well, and we're looking forward to the next five or six episodes. We've been working hard to get everybody scheduled in, haven't we? So we're really on a good thing here.
Yeah.
So tell us about our guest today, Nuria.
Sure. So I would say a warm welcome to our treasured listeners and welcome back to Rich Tapestries. And today we are going to dive into a story more colorful than Mumbai monsoons and richer than a mouthful of chicken dum biryani. So please welcome our guest, Amit Alonde, who is currently based in Gudna Salvos. Namaskar, Amit Dada.
Namaskar, Nuria. And good day, Bryce.
Howdy, mate. Yeah. No, I can say that too. I did a trek through the Himalayas one time, so I was saying namaste to everybody. So
awesome.
I know that's a good way to say hello in your language, isn't it?
It is. Yes.
Terrific.
You're right.
And I think it means more than just hello, doesn't it? It's a little bit more sort of deep than that.
Absolutely. Amit, would you like to say what namaste means?
That's a good question. I think it's a good start because namaste in India, it means I bow down to the divine in you. And for me, it is I bow down to the Christ in you. And that's a wonderful way of looking into it when we are speaking or we meet the person for the first time, to just see Christ in them.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah.
Mm. So beautiful. And actually, just to let you know more about Amit, Amit's born and raised in the Bollywood capital of Mumbai, and Amit's channeled that drama and flair into something truly epic, which is leading youth and community ministry in Gudna in Queensland. He is a mission team leader at the Salvation Army Center there. And I've already told Amit that basically his next Netflix pilot is Mission Gudna Possible.
That's a good one.
You're ready with that.
That will be my debut.
Sure.
Do you do all your own stunts, Amit? That's the real question.
I can start doing it now.
Yes, yes. Actually, that leads me into, his passions, Bryce. So Amit's very passionate about practicing martial arts. He likes to preach the word of God. Photography is his another passion, stalking wildlife, as well as his personal favorite thing, time, is spending time with his family and traveling. So Amit is supported by his lovely wife, Jessica, and their one-of-a-kind 12-year-old son, Yeshua. Is that right, Amit, how I pronounce?
That's right, yeah.
Awesome. And Amit, I know that your favorite is chicken manchow soup.
It is, yes.
Yeah, it's a favorite of most Mumbaiites who love their non-vegetarian, right?
That's one of the street foods that you get in India, especially in Mumbai. Lovely. Yeah.
So buckle up, friend. This episode is going to be serving up a hearty nourishment. Once again, Amit, welcome to Rich Tapestries and let your light shine. Aapla swagat ahe.
Thank you. Thank you, Nuria. That's a wonderful way of introducing and welcoming me. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So tell me a bit about childhood and growing up for you, Amit, and where you were born and what your mum and dad were doing at that time.
Growing up in Mumbai was a mix of vibrant experiences and deep challenges. I was born into a Christian family with a strong legacy of faith and services. My father started his career as the head of the municipal corporation before being called into the church ministry and later serving with the Bible Society of India.
What was that first one? What was that?
He was the head of the municipal corporation.
The municipal corporation. So that's government department.
Yes.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. And then he was called into the church ministry. He also served for the Bible Society of India. My grandfather and the great-grandfather were also ministers going back to the Church of England before India's independence. Wow. So faith and service were deeply woven into our family's identity. My childhood had its share of beautiful memories, but also some painful ones. I lost my mother when I was about 6, which was a defining moment in my early life. My stepmother, who came into our lives later, raised us with love and care as her own. And as a pastor's kid, life came with a lot of expectations and restrictions. Academics were the primary focus. Anything outside of studies, like sports or hobbies, was often seen as a distraction. I had 2 older sisters, and tragically, one of them passed away in 2020 due to a rare heart condition. I also have a younger brother, 10 years my junior, from my stepmother. Our family life was full of transitions and uncertainties, and stepping into unknown zones became a constant theme from a young age for me. Now, these experiences shaped my resilience, but they also made my teenage years quite complex. Despite the challenges, my cultural heritage and family's spiritual foundation gave me a strong sense of identity and purpose.
So, were you in you're in a city in Mumbai, so that's a quite modern city. You had a, you know, it wasn't, I don't know, I've never lived in India, so tell me a bit about what that was like. Is it a bit like Sydney or completely different?
Mumbai, it's a financial capital for India, and you have about, I think, 24 million people living in one city. It's a huge, big city. It's a Bollywood capital. All these actors, actresses, and people throughout India, they at least once in their lifetime would love to come and see Mumbai, what Mumbai is all about. So it's a big city, yes. It's a thriving place. They say Mumbai never sleeps.
It's also it's also called as you know, it said that Mumbai is a city of opportunities, Bryce, and you know, I think we can see that Amit's upbringing seems to be the city of values as well.
Also city of sin.
So what do you mean by that? There's just a lot of materialism or something, is there? What'd you say?
That's right, yes.
Or violence, or what do you mean?
You can talk about all things you'll find in a big city, any metropolitan city.
So what was your experience of school like? Did you enjoy school, and were you one of the popular kids? Were you part of the group, or were you a bit of an academic nerdy kind of person? Describe a bit about how you saw yourself as a kid at school.
As a kid in the school, if you're talking about the early life, I think I was a very studious student because that was expected from us, but that changed in my teenage life.
Well, I'm curious, what happened in the teenage years that changed that? What was that about?
To be honest, I was a pretty rebellious teenager. Losing my mother at such a young age left a deep void, and I carried a lot of anger, especially towards God. I couldn't understand why he would take my mother away from me, and that pain turned into kind of resentment. And being a pastor's kid came with a lot of expectations and restrictions. And I didn't like that label. You know, I just hated to be called as a pastor's son. Even though I was growing up in a church, I didn't know God personally. He felt distant. So I started off as a first rank student in my very early stages of life. But as I entered into my teens, I lost the focus. I fell behind in my studies and got into bad habits. Talk about it, smoking, drinking, fights, and pretty much everything that pulled me away from God. I even got involved in local politics and became a youth leader in the political party, which gave me some sort of recognition and a sense of identity. After high school, I managed to get into college and completed my degree while working in sales. And eventually I became an area sales manager, and I thought I had found my path. But as Romans 5:20, it reminds me, where sin increased, grace increased all the more. My parents, they never stopped praying for me. And one day God brought me to my knees. I encountered him in a real and personal way, and accepted Jesus as my savior in the year 2000. Now, that was a life-changing moment for me, the moment that changed everything. I gave my life to him and went on to study at the seminary for 4 years and graduated from there, taking my Bachelor's of Divinity. I was later ordained as a minister in the Presbyterian Church where I had grown up. And looking back, my teenage years were filled with struggle, but they were also the backdrop of God's incredible grace and redemption in my life.
So was there a particular moment that stood out in your spiritual journey?
I believe one of the things was, of course, though I was away from God, but the values that were inbuilt in me as growing up in a Christian family and the prayers that I knew that my parents were just praying. One night I was away with my friends. I just took my bike in, if I'm not wrong, if I remember well, it was exam time. And that was the times when nighttime we used to just study hard. I just one night took my bike and came out, and some of our friends decided we'll go and go for a drink. And that's where we kind of got into some fights with another gang of boys who were in the bar as well. And somehow when I came out from there, my conscience was pricking me. What am I doing? More than what the world could do or the police can do, I was more afraid of what would my father think about me or what would God be when he looks at me. What is he actually thinking about me? And that kind of just ignited a spark in me that this is not something that God wants me to do. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think I started praying. I came on my knees and God was more evident to me during that time. Yeah.
So you finished school and went pretty much straight into ministry. Is that right?
I did. Yeah. I finished my university. I did my bachelor's and then I went to the seminary. I got my second bachelor's. And from then on, I was in ministry. Yeah.
So you have wow. 2 degrees.
I do. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Smart guy.
As I said, that study was not my thing, but it was a God thing, I think.
So tell me about your first appointment as a minister. Where was that and what was that like?
That was back in India in the same church. Again, that church, my grandfather, he donated the land to build the church. And my father, when he was, he's still a minister in the same church, actually. And that was in our language, Marathi language. When I came into ministry, I started an English congregation back in the same church. That's where the ministry started. And I was also helping in the main big church, the Marathi church. Yeah.
Hmm. And was there a social welfare element to church life for you as the minister? Was it mainly preaching and teaching and pastoral life?
I was not taking any salary from the church. I was employed as a corporate social responsibility head for a company called Wockhardt. That was one of the largest Indian pharmaceutical company in UK. Okay. But the head office was in Mumbai. I was very much into the social world. They were spending millions of dollars into social activities being a corporate. And I used to get that kind of, whether it is to do with the money or it is to do with their services into churches. And through the churches, we were just able to reach out to the people. For me, it was my ministry. And God providing through the corporate.
So Amit, how long did you work in India before coming to Australia?
I graduated from the seminary in 2005. We came to New Zealand. We didn't come to Australia. We came to New Zealand February 2009.
And that was after getting married?
After we got married in 2006. From 2005 onwards, 2009, I was ministering in India.
Awesome. And I believe your wife, Jessica, is also, you know, working as a minister. Is that correct? At Goodenough? Could you just speak into that a little bit?
Jessica, she is a qualified social worker. She's done the master's in social work. So she was registered social worker back in New Zealand, also in India. Here, when she started, she was working as a chaplain for social and prison services. And Goodenough, one of the days she was in Goodenough. And now she's not in Goodenough, so she's just doing the prison. And she's also a chaplain for the Westside Christian College. So she's providing her chaplaincy services there as well. So, yes. So she was part of Goodenough in the initial stages, but not now.
So you're transitioning, you know, from New Zealand and then coming to Australia. Like, were you part of Salvation Army in New Zealand as well?
That's another story, actually. Salvation Army, being coming from the Presbyterian Church, Salvation Army was never a place for us because I thought Salvation Army theology is having some problems. These people don't do communion. These people don't do baptisms. You know, these are not Christians. So that was my thoughts. And I was so much wrong in thinking about Salvation Army in that way. When we came to New Zealand, we were staying with one of the Hindu families. And we were just having one of their rooms. And one thing we did was Sundays, we wanted to go to church. So we requested this family that if they could help transport us to church. So we used to find a church online, and then these people used to drive us to the church. And one fine Sunday morning, there was no transport because these people had to go somewhere. And Jessica and I, we thought, oh, we have to go to church. We can't just sit home. And we started looking for churches, and we saw the only church at the walking distance was the Salvation Army. And we walked into the Salvation Army core, and for us it was a church, not so much used to the jargon, Salvation Army jargons. Then we went inside and we saw that everyone was in the uniform, and then they were all elderly people, beautiful people, nice people, so welcoming. The first impression for us was that, okay, good, this gives us more reason not to come to Salvation Army. These people look so foreign. We didn't see any people who were kind of in our age group, but the people were so wonderful to us, and the officers were not there on that Sunday. And the Corps Sergeant Major, I still remember, his name was Neil. He came to us asking us if you could come next Sunday. And we just said, oh, we will see how it goes. And we came home, and we used to come home and pray about it. God, where do you want us to be when it comes to church? Mm-hmm. And next Sunday, the same thing happened. These people were not available. The transport was not there. And we thought, all right, let's go to the Salvation Army again. And the officers were there this time, and they had a chat with us after the church. Knowing our background, they invited us to their place in the quarters for lunch. And we went there. I started asking questions about what is Salvation Army and why don't you do, you know, the Holy Communion and baptism and stuff. And the officer, he was absolutely fantastic in terms of explaining. He said that these are sacraments that Salvation Army believes that it's not just these sacraments, but our life should be a sacrament. And that really touched me. Jessica and I, coming from a background where we used to go into the slums and also do church ministry there. And we were looking for a church without walls kind of thing. And what better church you can have than Salvation Army? And before we knew, kind of, we started coming to the same church, in spite of me thinking like there's no one of our age and kind of thing. But God definitely had a plan. We were sucked into the ministry. I became a Corps Sergeant Major there. I was already called for the full-time ministry, but Jessica was not in New Zealand during those time. When it's a couple, both of you have to be in officership if you need to. If you're thinking of officership, you can't just go as a single officer. And there was a calling Jessica had, and then we went to the training college, and here we are. Yeah.
Wow. So what were some of the issues for you transitioning from India to, I guess, a very predominantly white Western culture like New Zealand and Australia? What was challenging, and what were the sort of things that helped you? Was it a challenge? It sounded like your English is very good, and the dream scenario is that everybody just treated you like everybody else and there was no cultural issues, but my suspicion was there might have been something. So can you talk to me about that?
First of all, thank you, Bryce, for saying my English is good.
It is,
I think I'm still struggling between, you know, Indian English, and then in Indian English, we have different languages. My language, I have that accent. And then coming to New Zealand, we were still trying to get into the New Zealand accent. And then now we're in Australia. We lived in New Zealand for the last 14 years. And so it's all mixture, trying to get hold of the jargons and, you know, all the things. I think coming back to your question, Bryce, it was challenging because simple things like a simple humor that will make you laugh as a new immigrant, I would just wonder what was there so funny about it. Or things that probably would make me laugh, you would probably think, what was that funny about? You know, whatever this person has said. Things that probably I would find as friendly talk would be offending a person, or someone saying things that is casual in this culture would probably be very offensive to me.
Yeah.
Just to find your space in all this new culture, what are you going to say? Sometimes you just have to sit quiet, you know, because you may end up offending someone or you may be a fool if you open your mouth. So these were some of the struggles to start with. Other struggles were we have a very hierarchical structure back in India in terms of we really respect the elders, the pastors, and pastors are like, you know, next to God. They are on the pedestal. And then I was doing my post-graduation in social work in Massey University back in New Zealand and went to the university and seeing the professor coming in his shorts and just, you know, scratching his head and people calling him with first name. And I was like, really? How can these people be so disrespectful towards their professors, you know? And how can these professors just come on shorts? And, you know, for us in India, you'll see all these professors back in suit having the ties on and stuff. And so it's very corporate culture. So these were some of the issues that when I look back now at these things, they look so petty and so silly to me, but they were big as a new immigrant. Yes.
I can so relate to you, Amit, because I come from Mumbai as well, right? Same city as Amit. And this is exactly, you know, like what I experienced. Initially, such a culture shock and so many new things. And as you mentioned about the jargons, and sometimes, you know, like I would just join the team in our office and laugh with them just to show that, yes, I do understand that I'm with you.
I still do it, Nuria.
I think I hear you, though, because the one thing you want is to be able to be yourself and to be authentically yourself. Yeah. But if you're in a situation where you're not sure what's funny or what's accepted, you can feel quite isolated and outside the cool group or the known group. And like any society, any change you make, you're joining into groups that have been sometimes together for a generation. And here's this guy coming in who doesn't think the same and doesn't maybe look the same. And there's all sorts of challenges on finding your place and finding a place of comfort there. I wonder how much being a Christian minister and having a Salvation Army structure around you helped in that space to find your tribe is almost what we're talking about here, isn't it?
Yeah.
The beautiful, beautiful thing about Salvation Army is we are so much accepting, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. And I think that was very helpful, Bryce.
Well, we say that. I'm just checking in. We say that. That's our culture. That's our, you know, we've got that written on the wall. You experienced that personally and in your real world?
Depends on how you look at it, Bryce. I know people, and I've gone through struggles as well. It's not that, not saying that I haven't. When we think about, you know, we think, oh, it's because I'm from a different culture. That's the reason I'm not getting this opportunity. Or probably this is the reason why people are doing this and stuff. I always said to myself, suck it up kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, God has called you for a reason. You have something to offer that is different. And it's not about what people are thinking or people are doing. They might have a reason or they may not even have a reason. It's just about us victimizing ourselves and thinking that this is the reason I'm not able to do certain things.
Yeah.
You know, if God has called you for something, you go and you do it. You know, none of us, doesn't matter what skin color you are, none of us don't struggle. You know, there are challenges. You have different challenges. I have different challenges.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think there are some things I'm going to be good at and some things I'm going to be bad at, and people are going to make calls on that. And if I go, oh, you're doing that because I'm slightly bald or I'm an older guy, you know, I could get all... We need to sort of, I guess, have a mature response to normal life, and we can be victims or we can get on with it.
And just to add to that, Bryce, you know, like I think it's how about we look at things as well, you know? Sometimes, you know, you take that positive step and move on.
So, it can it can be hard at times.
Absolutely.
It can be seen as racism. I've said to Indians, if Indian people come and these people do this in this country, I say, go back to your country and see how much racist we are to our own people. So it is, we all are in some or the other kind racist towards other people. We think other cultures are funny. We think other cultures, some things are bad. Every culture has some or the other things. So, I cannot blame others because I am in the same world.
I love that.
It's just about,
So true, Amit, and thanks for throwing light on that, because you know it's always like you can only tell someone so much, but first thing, you know, the change starts with yourself, your own self, and we all need to reflect on that, I personally feel, because as you rightly said, we all are racist in some or the other way, which sometimes you know and sometimes you unknowingly do it. I would love to know more about your current role in Goodenough Star Wars. Like, you're doing such an amazing job, and I've been, you know, I've known you for a bit and worked with your teams as well, so would love to hear from you about that ministry.
Stepping into the ministry at Goodenough, it has been one of the most eventful and eye-opening journeys of my life. Honestly, when I started in this role, I didn't have a full picture of what I was walking into. And the deeper I got into it, the more I found myself asking, what on earth am I doing here? I even asked God, why me, God? And in one of those raw moments, I felt God speak to me very clearly. He said, if you're looking for perfect people, I don't need you.
Wow. That was a shock. Can you say that again? That's really interesting. If you're looking for perfect people, I don't need you.
Yes. And that really stopped me to just think about it. Really, God? And God, literally, like, these are the people, he said, I want you to serve in this season. That moment changed everything. And from then on, I've been deeply in love with the ministry, my team, and I are involved in Goodenough.
Just so people know, tell me a bit about the demographics of Goodenough. What's it like?
Yeah.
Now, Goodenough is a place where you'll never have a dull moment. It's a high risk and a high need area, but it's also full of incredible people, many of whom, like me, I think have walked paths that weren't always honorable to God. But if I can be redeemed by his grace, how can I not believe that this beautiful community can be redeemed too? In our ministry here, we focus heavily on faith pathways, as I believe when we put God first, rest all falls in place. We have a chapel service. We have chaplaincy services. We have a Bible reading group. We have men's group, women's group. Kids drop in. We have free tutoring for kids. We have Indigenous women's group. We run a community cafe that serves free hot meals 3 days a week. And we offer shower facilities, free laundry facilities, emergency clothing, crisis care. I think there's a real sense of belonging here. We have a small team of like five of us employed, three full-time and two part-time employees. But we are also backed with over 50 amazing volunteers who bring heart and energy to everything we do here. Now, it's not always easy, as you can imagine. Some nights I lie awake thinking about the challenges we face, but it's deeply rewarding.
It must be difficult to measure that up against a traditional church model where you've got polite people sitting in rows on a Sunday morning listening attentively to what you've got to say. You've got a much more chaotic environment, haven't you? How do you feel like you're winning? Like what does success look like in that environment in terms of your ministry results? You know, it's hard.
I've been pastoring church since 2005 now. It's almost 20 years in different places. But the ministry that we have here, as you mentioned, it can be chaotic. And in this chaos, that's where we see God very evident in the lives of people. That's where we see God, like we say in Salvation Army, transforming lives one at a time. And I think it's real. Many times we have to put a different face in the church when we go to Sunday church services. We might be there for the fellowship. We might be there because we like the people. We might like the pastor. Here, people are in need, but when we see people worshiping, we see the hunger, the real hunger. We see the real touch of living God in lives of people. And that gives a different sort of kick. And I love that. Bryce, you may know this because you have started the street level. You know what street level is and what kind of people come to Salvation Army. And that's very beautiful. It's a different church.
These people know that they're messed up. They're not full of proud that they're some squeaky clean, you know, pristine Christian. They're messy. And if they get the message that God loves them and they can worship and they can kind of come into the presence of God just like anybody else, it's a bit of a special thing, isn't it? They need it. They they're more desperate for it in a sense, you know?
Bryce, yeah, and I feel that looking and serving in the people in Gooden, I feel it's not just they are messed up. I feel like we are messed up. And as much as I need God, you know, yeah. I'm just a saved sinner. I don't have the label that that person probably coming to us has on their head, very visible. But there are things that I am into that I may know or I may not know that I'm not worthy to stand before God. It's Jesus in me that makes me worthy.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And also, so, you know, like, this is so beautiful and so inspiring and truly encouraging, Amit, you know. And also in Bible, we have seen that stories are not merely accounts of sin, but testimonies of how God's mercy can restore and repurpose lives. Absolutely. And faith, which can be reconciled with God. So I think you guys, you are just doing a brilliant job there. And I would like to say something, you know, something reminds me of this in Marathi, you know, I would say that tumi gudna salvas madhe kaam karat ahat, manje seva hits khari puja, he siddha karat ahat. So what I mentioned to Amit is that you're working at Gudna Salvas and you're proving that service is the true worship. And actually living the faith. So thank you for that, Amit.
Thank you.
Very encouraging. And Amit, just a question arises to my mind. Like when you're working at Gudna Salvas, obviously you come across many called communities, right?
Yep.
And so are there any challenges which come across when you work with these communities? Any obstacles you have encountered and how do you overcome them?
It's quite obvious that there are challenges working with people coming from the cult communities. Reason being, sometimes their communities are so big, they may be living the same life as they were living back home in their own countries. Mm. And that also creates a lot of abuse in between the community. Some people know how to do life in this new country. Others don't. They might be their family members or maybe just people who know them. And that creates an issue in itself. Without having any supports in their own community, they think that that's all life is all about. And that's where we get an opportunity to be the bridge, not just for us to have an kind of entry into their world, but also for them to have an exit out of the world, the little world that they are living in. And just to know about the supports and things that are outside their own little world that can be really beneficial for them. So the challenges are getting that breakthrough into the lives of people because people are doubtful about what are the intentions of these people. Talking about, say, for example, Indian community, we are more about, when it comes to Christians, if you've heard from India that there are, in the parliament, the bills are passed, anti-conversion bills. So they think that Christians give money and make them follow Jesus Christ. Or when the Britishers were in India, they just, you know, gave some money to these people and they became Christian. So we're not looked into in a good light as Christians. So to get entry into the lives of people, not just, I just refer to Indians, but it's similar in different kinds in different cult communities
different
as well.
Yeah.
And I think the only thing that is different for us as Salvation Army is we go with God's power, first thing. And second thing is we are relational. We accept people no matter what background this person comes from. And for me, I believe that it's not the programs, it's not the activities that change people. It's the relationship that you have with people.
Absolutely. You're just the right one, actually. Relational. That's what we actually value and And I would actually ask you one more question in Marathi, Amit. So Gudna Salvas madhe tumi called manje sanskrutik ani bhashik drushtya je vividha samudaya ahe te tumchyasathi ani sarva salvasathi aashirvad manun kase manta. So I'll repeat that question in English. So Amit, in Gudna Salvas, how do you perceive called communities as a blessing to you and to all Salvas? Because as you rightly said, that we invest in relationships and we actually consider them as blessings. So how do you perceive this at Gudna?
First of all, I'm just loving to hear this Marathi after many years. I've been out of my country for 17 years, but not on any platform that I've heard me being interviewed in Marathi. So that's really nice. Thank you very much. Khup chan watla Marathi madhe aikasati. So thank you very much.
Namaste.
When we think about...
I love that, Amit. See?
Right. Thought I should contribute to this conversation. So.
Thank you. Right, we'll keep saying Bryce, namaste.
Thank you for seeing Christ in me. One of the blessings is Jesus himself commanded his disciples to go to the corners of the world and preach the gospel. And what I love is the corners of the world is at our doorstep.
Yeah.
When we talk about cult communities, you don't have to go to Africa. You don't have to go to India. You don't have to go to China. These people are here. You know? So what are we doing with the people that God has given us? You know, we have all these big visions about going to the corners of the world. God is saying, I brought these people to you. It's like Noah, as we believe that the animals came to him in the ark. He might have just, you know, probably said, oh, what do I do with these animals? But no. So God has brought these people. And that's what I feel. It's such a huge blessing. What are we doing with these people? Because Australia is changing. It is changing. It is multicultural. And if our focus is going to be just the same as it was traditionally for years, I have the privilege of living in and working and serving in three countries now. And I see that, you know, what God is doing, he's just making it as a one nation kind of thing. And how much of a responsibility we have where he has placed, how we can grow where we are planted. So that's very blessing I see to have these people from the cult community wherever we are. So I hope I've answered the question, Nuria.
Well,
the obvious one is you've got good food from all over the world. And if we didn't have that, we'd be having English cooking for the rest of our lives, which is not fantastic, right. Truthfully.
I won't reveal that secret, but the kitten is out of the basket. So the food is good.
You should talk about Bryce's obsession, recent obsession with cooking dal. He's all into Indian.
I cook
Indian
a dal every week now. I do.
Cool.
We need to wind it up. So I'm going to ask a question about what you would say to your 15-year-old self if you could speak into that young man's life with what you know today. What would you say to him?
Bryce, I'll just say all we get is time and choices. Be wise with both.
Really?
Good. Beautiful. And also, Amit, you know, like I would like to give some food for thought to our listeners, you know, so perhaps best enjoyed with a plate of chicken biryani. How can your local cause or your local churches embrace diversity and honor called members in a way that reflect genuine care and unity? So, this is, you know, for our listeners.
I think the simple exercise that sometimes we see in our churches, we do welcoming people in different languages.
Yep.
That itself plays a huge role. Just to listen. Sometimes people don't come with that expectation that someone is going to welcome me in my language. And it goes beyond what we can even think of. That brings a belonging. I think simple things are important. We don't need to look for big things. If we can have those kinds of either welcome messages in different languages when people come in, we can read that language.
Absolutely.
Like for you and I, Nuria, probably in spite of coming from Indian background, Marathi, Hindi, our acquaintance is more with English. But still, if we see something in Marathi or Hindi, we still love it.
Absolutely. So, if I hear a word, someone speaking in Marathi, you know, like my eyes light up straight away. So, no, that's really beautiful, Amit. And it was such a great treat, I would say, listening to you and, you know, having this beautiful interview. So, in Marathi, I would say, Amit, tumcha drushti konatun kaal samudai salvo sati ashirvad ahe. What I just said was, as per Amit, call communities are a blessing to salvo. So, thank you for sharing your journey and insights. And I believe we are definitely inspired, myself and Bryce, and so should be our listeners by your witness. And let's lean into deeper inclusion, into humility and cultural respect. So thanks for being with us. And listeners, if today's conversation has inspired you to deepen your journey towards becoming an intercultural faith community, we encourage you to take the next steps. Thank you, and God bless you. Thank you, Amit.
Thanks, Amit.
Thanks.
Bye now.
See ya. Yeah, bye.
Bye. See ya.
Bye.